Blog Talk Radio.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
Welcome to the Balance Money Install, Mark Woodell, President of Summit Club, the number one internet sports talk show in the world. So good to have you along. Sorry, we had a little bit of a late start this morning, but everything is good to go and ready to go and ready to rock and roll. And we're going to start things off. We're just going to jump right into some NASCAR talk. Steve Wilson, Speedway Digest. Steve, how are you doing, son?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself this morning?
Fantastic. Sorry about the delayed start this morning. It's like one of those things that couldn't get everything lined up, plugged up, jacked up. You know how it is. I believe we're going to have, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, I did get a tweet, private tweet message as well, because it's going to come on today. And the same as Pit Stop Radio is coming on with us.
He may end up joining us, but I'm not 100% sure if he will or not.
Okay, no problem. No problem. Well, you know what? Let's just talk about the elephant in the room. You know, you and I talked yesterday about Jeff Gordon getting back in the car, possibly will happen. Moving forward to Indianapolis next weekend, obviously not this weekend, but next weekend. Let me ask you this. How big of a thing is that? Are we reading too much into this?
I'm sorry, Tom. I you cut out on me, and I didn't catch your whole question.
Oh, I apologize. I said, you know, what's that for the next week? Are we reading more into the tea leaves here, or is this a sign of something to come where Jeff Gordon is going to become more of a backup driver and not fully be out of the car? Is this something just to be an apple?
No, I think this is probably just going to be a one-time thing. With Jeff Gordon really being from around the Indianapolis area, growing up around there, being from around there, also having roots definitely in California too, but, you know, a lot of it being around the Indianapolis and Indiana area, you know, Jeff Gordon would be the obvious choice, and still with his ties in and a lot of his relationships with Hendrick Motorsports, his lifetime contract is still there or still in effect with Hendrick Motorsports. You know, that's not something that went away when he retired. His driving rights are still at Hendrick Motorsports. So we won't see that preclude him from getting in one of their cars from this point on out, should something like that happen. So I think Indianapolis is the obvious choice for Jeff Gordon to get back into the car if need be. I don't think that you'll see him getting into the car much or if any after that. I think it's just more or less because it is Indianapolis, because it is, you know, his home. And, you know, with his roots in that area, Jeff Gordon has won there before. And I think putting him there and just kind of giving that, nostalgic, boost for not only the team, but for being there at the track and for everybody all around. I think it's just the obvious choice, but I just don't think you'll see him in that car after that. I think that they'll look to other drivers beyond Indianapolis should Dale Earnhardt not be able to return for the distant future.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Dale Earnhardt. Obviously, the NASCAR race for Hampshire, we could talk about that race there in a second. Yeah, we were very well news. This could affect the race that they had. Could affect whether or not he races again this year or great stretch. So, 41 years old. I'm wondering, are we coming to an end of an era? Obviously, Dale Jr. taking the pole is one of the most popular drivers. Not to say that Jeff Ford isn't, but wasn't the beginning. But I think it's part of the world. Dale Jr. is by far probably popular. And so, you know, I know he talks about having headaches and the allergies, but because of his symptoms and things in the past, are we seeing an end of the character, the beginning of the end?
You know, I think with Dale Earnhardt Jr., you know, you're right. He is in his early 40s already. We see other drivers in the same boat at the same time. Jimmy Johnson is also in that same stable, you know, over at Hendrick Motorsports. He's also in his 40s at the same time. You know, Jeff Gordon, when he got out of the car, obviously he's in his 40s, and but his was much more contained to his back. I think you're starting to see these drivers starting to have to make that decision. Now, we've heard Jimmy Johnson already say that, you know, Jimmy Johnson may be the exception to the rule at this point. Jimmy Johnson is on the pole this weekend at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. I don't, you know, he's in tip top health shape as far as that is concerned. He works out a lot. He stays fit. He eats healthy. He has a workout regimen to make sure that he's on top of his game. Not to say that Dale Jr. isn't, you know, doing those things, and he has over the last several years obviously changed his lifestyle around. You know, he's made mention of that many times in interviews to the media, to fans who have questioned, you know, through various social media channels and etc. So Dale Jr. is doing that himself, you know, because he has to think about the longevity of how long will he be in this car? Much longer. As, you know, obviously his age at 41. But wholesale, I'm sure he's looking at this as the same thing that, you know, when Jeff Gordon had to figure out how much longer he could stay in his back. Or when Jimmy Johnson was asked earlier this year when he was, multi-car crashes week after week. And they asked him, well, Jimmy, and to paraphrase, how many times are you going to continue to crash, and, you know, week after week, and how are you going to start thinking about maybe retiring at some point? And, you know, his statement was, and to paraphrase him, is that, you know, when I'm not thinking about retiring right now, but, you know, when I get to that point, I'll let everybody know. So, you know, I think, you know, in everybody's mind, when you start getting to this point, obviously you need to start putting the plans in place. And whether Dale Jr. is, you know, obviously Dale Jr. has plans in place. He has a race team out there that he works with and owns. He has multiple other businesses out there that he's a part of or owns or co-owns. He has endorsement deals, etc. So, I mean, he's unlike any other driver that may leave this sport from driving and be okay, obviously due to his popularity. But, you know, obviously he needs to start at some point thinking about his health at the same time. This isn't the first time that we've seen these concussion-like symptoms in him. Just a couple of years ago, he missed two races from these same exact symptoms. So you'd have to, maybe he needs, and this is just from a personal aspect, how many times do you want to continue going through this before you need to take a look and say, okay, enough is enough? Because, I mean, obviously we look at other sports. Muhammad Ali is probably a great example of this. Back then, they didn't exactly understand what concussions were. We're in the medical industry and sports industry now. We can kind of correlate these more and more together and see what is happening, how they're happening, and where you're going to end up further down in your life, in your lifespan. But I think that that's probably a good tie-in when you start thinking about these things. And maybe these are things that a lot of these drivers do start thinking about these days and are going to start thinking about here in the near future. And I'm not saying that Dale Jr. is, you know, going to get out the car tomorrow because he's worried that, you know, something like that's going to happen. But, you know, anything could happen to these race car drivers. But I think they all have to start thinking about it in the aspect of, you know, how many times are you willing to risk it before, you know, something seriously does come out of it?
Well, absolutely. Talking to Steve Wilson from Speed Race Digest, you know, we're talking to NASCAR. We're going to be talking about this race in London here in just a few minutes. But, you know, with this thing with Dale Jr., it really brings to life that because of the major issue of cross off-course, you pointed out here, and you know, I understand that NASCAR doesn't have the rules that require a driver to go to a doctor. I mean, you wonder about how many times drivers get in the car with concussions, probably more than what we want to know. I mean, I know that data reporters from Michigan and Daytona Rec didn't really raise any immediate red flags as far as enforcement of those accidents. The driver, therefore, did not need any medication. NASCAR, as I was mentioning, does not have the threshold of driver required like IndyCar does. The question is, Steve, shouldn't NASCAR on the side of the car, maybe it will be the most popular rule, but NASCAR as an organization has such a rule, and should drivers who have had a history of concussion be scrutinized more after accidents? And I think that Dale Jr. did right by going to a doctor. Should we be talking about or when they should, maybe even when they go to the intensive care, they only have to go to the intensive care. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they do. I don't know what happens. The doors of the intensive care are going to let them check for what they don't check for.
Well, I'll go back to two points onto this. The first point is that in every one of these cars, there are data recorders and crash recorders into this. The NASCAR R&D Center does look at all of this crash data. They compile this data. They look at the G-forces. They have engineers, both internally and externally, that do take a look at a lot of this data. Teams are also privy to this data, should they request it. Hendrick Motorsports, as of this weekend, they said when they were talking in this press conference, Doug Ducart said that he was unsure whether Hendrick Motorsports had requested the crash data from both Michigan and Daytona. Now, you know, that's to the first point of this. So, you know, NASCAR does know what these drivers are experiencing. They know where they're experiencing it at, and et cetera. Now, to the second point on this, as part of your competitor's license and a part of your competitor's being a competitor in the sport, should you go to the doctor and should you go and see your family physician or whatever the case may be? In this case, Dale Jr. did go and see a family physician. He is required under his competitor's license to immediately notify NASCAR of any kind of anomalies that may have occurred. NASCAR has a board of doctors on staff of their that they have a review board themselves. They also have an external doctor that reviews these things, Dr. Petty in Charlotte. That he's very good. He's taken a look, and he's worked with many doctors. I mean, worked with many of these drivers over the years. He's treated a lot of these drivers over the years. And, you know, between working with Dr. Petty, who is external to NASCAR, and working with the review board that is internal to NASCAR, you know, this is where the whole you cannot come back and compete within the sport until both parties agree that whatever your symptoms may be, whether the concussion symptoms are minor or severe or mild, et cetera, have been completed, have been treated successfully. So this is a multi-pronged approach from NASCAR to ensure that, you know, whatever the issues may be, and, you know, even after the review and you coming back in, you know, NASCAR does keep track of these things. So it's not like it just happens and it goes away. It still is the responsibility of the drivers. They do keep the medical review staff informed of what's going on. And, you know, you do also as a driver, to get your license every year, you still do have to perform a physical every year and pass concussion tests and et cetera to continue competing within the sport to even get your license.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, we'll be monitoring the situation. I think that a lot of times NASCAR come up their own internal way of safety. Not that they're not safety by all means, I can apply that. But one of the things I do think is that they're a little bit slower on catching up with other race series. You know, I don't really know what the reason for that is, and you know, I'm sure that there is a reason, and maybe it's because they don't want to fight all the other series. But, you know, we'll continue to have this conversation. We certainly want to talk about what's going on in London. Not London, England. Although I think, you know, IndyCar has I wonder, you ever thought about this, Steve? You ever thought about would NASCAR take off, you know, would NASCAR be able to draw a fan base internationally?
Well, back in the 90s, they did try and run two races in Japan at the Twin Rings in Japan, and then they also ran another race there in Japan. It was fairly popular. They were exhibition races. One of them was run in the rain. It's something that NASCAR had not done before and has not done since. So it was interesting to watch. I don't think it was as popular with NASCAR fans here in the States because obviously, you know, it was aired at I think something like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning here because of the time differences, but it was fairly popular to them. You take a look at Euro NASCAR, which is similar to the NASCAR Home Track Series here. There are a lot of support within that series within Europe. They travel across Europe. They compete on a multitude of different tracks between ovals and road courses. There are a lot of international drivers that compete there within that series, all from across Europe that come there. There are a lot of drivers that are from the States that have gone across and competed on the off weekends that are within the home track series. Some of those drivers have even come over here from the Euro NASCAR series and competed in Camping World Truck Series races and NASCAR Xfinity Series races. So NASCAR is using and expanding these races across, as far as their reach will be. You know, NASCAR has tried to go to Mexico. They've gone to Mexico City a couple of times. That event, unfortunately, just didn't seem to take off. It was fairly popular in the first couple of years or first year or two it was run, but then the popularity, they were having problems with the sponsorship down there. Unfortunately, they just couldn't continue to run it. And, they had to pull back from that in NASCAR Xfinity Series, so they had to return back here. They still do run some NASCAR Home Series races down there, and they do the NASCAR Mexico Series. They do come across, and they do run at Phoenix every year. So, I mean, there is a lot of international support around the world for NASCAR within the various series. However, the logistics of trying to run something as the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series in another country such as Europe, or even going back to Japan to the Twin Rings or something like that, it's very hard for them logistic-wise. A majority of the sport is obviously here in the States. There are a lot of international fans out there that would probably love to see them come and race outside of the country. However, facilities-wise, logistic-wise, it's just not there right now. When you talk to a lot of the tracks, though, you take a look at Daytona, for example. I think they had something like they had better than 20 international countries that were represented there just for the Daytona 500. I think Talladega, for the last Talladega race was the same thing. Better than 20 countries came here to watch a race. So the representation is there, and obviously people are wanting to see it. It's just how do you make it happen? I think it becomes an expensive prospect. You take a look at Formula One, for example, and some of these manufacturers are spending up to $1 billion a year to support their teams to move them around the world, and that's just not something that the auto manufacturers here are going to be able to do to move the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series around the world, and to find a international title sponsor for that would be almost impossible at the same time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Something interesting to think about, and what brought it up, obviously, is the NASCAR's in London, New Hampshire. Xfinity race today. Kyle Busch is the man, the monster. The guy who's got it all figured out this year across the board, Kyle Busch, to add another win in his win column, if you will. He takes the field in Friday practice about 129.8 miles per hour. 2.4 seconds than Ty Dillon, than Brad Spock. Certainly Alex Bowman, Daniel Perez, Elliot Sadler, Ryan Reed, and Brandon Lone rounded out the top 10 at Xfinity Race in New Hampshire. Let's break it down.
Yeah, you take a look at Kyle Busch. I mean, I don't know what else you can say about him. I mean, we can have this conversation, you know, week after week, and it's like deja vu everywhere he goes. You know, we go back to last week, Kyle Busch Motorsports in the Camp World Truck Series surpassed the series record for the most number of wins with 51 wins, surpassing Roush Fenway Racing, who had 50 wins in that series. Kyle Busch tacking on a lot of those his own self with 30 plus wins. If you take a look at what he's done in the Xfinity series, he's got something like a ton of wins in that. He holds a series record there too. Everywhere he goes, he seems to be very, very strong. And the more that he's settled down and the more that he's matured over his career, the more he seems to win. And of course, we know that he gets frustrated when he doesn't win, and that's just a product of being a racer and just being the racer at heart that he is and wanting to win every week. And unfortunately, he can't win every week, and he knows he can't win every week, but he thinks he can win every week. But the fact is, he can win every week. You know, he's in that position every single week to win, no matter where he goes. And, you know, sometimes due to unfortunate circumstances, he just doesn't win. But, this weekend coming into New Hampshire, he's going to be strong yet again. Joe Gibbs Racing, the power they put a TRD and everybody that puts together those motors for him, the chassis that they're building over there, for him and putting underneath of him for the Xfinity series. I mean, those guys are just on the top of their game right now. They've seemed to be on the top of their game for the last 18 months or so, since they've made a turnaround over at JGR. And, you know, Kyle Busch just continues that domination, not only in the Xfinity series, but just what he's doing in the Sprint Cup series from last year when he got back from his injuries and wreck at Daytona, and just has continued his winning ways just from that.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. He's certainly one to contend for. Obviously, we don't know if he's going to win the championship. Boy, does he have it in his sights. So we'll see what happens. Hate or love Kyle Busch, he is doing something right. It's interesting to see what happens with him. Over in the Sprint Cup Series, Jimmy Johnson getting the pole for New Hampshire. A lot on the line for the chase. The talk was just about the Sprint Cup Series, Jimmy Johnson and the pole. And, you know, let's take a look at the chase grid and what happens to get it.
Yeah, Jimmy Johnson really needs to kind of turn his season around. He's had a lot of bad luck this year already, and I think this can be one of his turnarounds, per se. He needs this pole. He needs to kind of turn this around. You know, Jimmy is by no means, bad luck hits everybody. Even a six-time champion in this sport, it can hit anybody. It can hit anybody anywhere. Jimmy Johnson obviously going into New Hampshire this weekend, he's going to be very strong out there. He's ninth in the points, so he's potentially locked himself in as long as he can maintain throughout the rest of the year. He's got two wins already, so he should be good to continue and stay in this chase hunt. Where he'll end up throughout when we get to Richmond later on in just a matter of a few weeks out here remains to be seen. I mean, he's going to be chasing down a lot of guys that have a few more wins than he does. Obviously, Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski got 3 and 4 wins respectively between their two cells, but between
you know, a lot of other guys. I think you have to look back at, you know, Kevin Harvick. Obviously, he's a strong guy when it comes into New Hampshire, and Carl Edwards is somebody else I think you got to look at, because Carl has kind of been knocking on that door week after week after week. He's already got 2 wins this season, his own self. And I think he's almost overdue for another win again. He's been strong at some of these tracks. And, you know, New Hampshire's another one of these kind of flat kind of tracks where you can run kind of wide open and kind of get underneath somebody. But, you know, you also – I think when we get back to Jimmy Johnson too, I think it also plays into Jimmy's kind of wheelhouse at the same time, because you think of New Hampshire as just an oversized Martinsville at the same time. It's flat, it's much longer, tight turns, and Jimmy just seems to be able to master these tracks for some reason.
Well, absolutely, and you know, we'll see how this pans out for Jimmy, because if he gets the win, that's certainly going to help his chase run, if you will. Kyle Busch can only clinch a top 30 spot with some help, but he might probably be able to do that. Even Carl Edwards, obviously, if he gets the win, I think gives him enough room to go ahead and clinch a spot before the cutoff. Kevin Harvick, 1 win, 599 points. You know, plus 382 points ahead of 31st. So you look at him, Kurt Busch, Joey Logano, Martin Truex Jr., all of those people could, in theory, clinch a chase for this weekend. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of them that, you know, have already locked themselves in, you know, unofficially at this point. You've got, I mean, Brad Keselowski, Kyle Busch, they're already locked in by virtue of their 3 and 4 wins, respectively. You've got Carl Edwards, Jimmy Johnson, they've pretty much locked themselves in by virtue of their 2 wins at the same time. You know, now Kevin Harvick, he's got himself locked in by virtue of just points alone, sitting on top of the points at this point. Brad we've already talked about Brad Keselowski because of his 4 wins. You've got guys already at this point in the season that by virtue of either their points or their wins are already sitting there locked into the chase no matter what happens. It's just kind of more of a maintain and make sure that you're getting into Richmond, and you're just kind of sitting there at a good starting position so that you're not kind of sitting at the back of the field. I think the danger area is really those guys running around at the back at this point, Matt Kenseth, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Newman, you know, those guys. You know, when you go farther back down the field, Austin Dillon, Jamie McMurray, and Trevor Bayne, some of those that are sitting back that have no wins, they're very tightly pushed together for that anywhere from 11th to 16th. There's only but a matter of about 40 points that separate all of those, less than 40 points anywhere in there. So, you know, those standings seem to change every single week. You know, Matt Kenseth, you know, he's got himself 1 win. Denny Hamlin, he's got 1 win. But, you know, so they've locked themselves in, obviously. But, you know, there's a lot of guys in there that, you know, haven't locked themselves in yet. Chase Elliott, who's running 8th at this point, he doesn't have a win. So, you know, he's potentially locked himself in at this point, but he's going to have to maintain throughout the rest of, you know, the rest of the summer series until we get into, you know, Richmond later on this year. And, you know, unfortunately last week with Ryan Blaney, he having a lot of trouble out there finishing and getting a real bad finish. He was maintaining, staying up there in the top 16 in points, could have potentially got himself locked into the chase. But unfortunately with that wreck involving him and Chase Elliott last week, he dropped 3 points back into 18th. But he's not out of this thing at this point. He's only 24 points. No, I'm sorry, 14 points out of 16th at this point. So he's got a chance to get himself and regain himself, because, you know, Wood Brothers Racing and that number 21 team, they've they've been running strong every single week. It's just that they've had a lot of bad luck this year in some of these races. I mean, Ryan Blaney has, you know, he's already got six top tens this year already and one top five. So throughout this year, you know, he's done very, very well for himself in his rookie season. So we'll just have to see where he's able to continue throughout the rest of this year. So I think this tightening points battle for, you know, as I say, everything down there from, you know, down at the bottom of that around 16th, 12th through 16th or so, and those guys, that's where we're really looking at this point in the season.
Alex Bowman, he's driving for Dale Jr., I believe, this weekend. Talk to us about him and what number 88 car, if he's getting ready to go out to practice based on the team. But Alex Bowman, driving for Dale Jr.
Alex Bowman is a guy that, you know, he's very well trusted within the series. He runs with Junior Motorsports this year. Well, he's running part-time with Junior Motorsports this year just because of the funding and with the sponsorship. Obviously, they've been trying to get him into a car more full-time, but he's very well trusted within the series. He ran last year with in the Sprint Cup Series with TBR Racing, and you know, he's got a lot of background in these series with running these cars, and especially these new cars. So, you know, Bowman, he's going to start 20th tomorrow afternoon at New Hampshire. Excuse me. So, you know, with Bowman, I think he's going to be able to help the number 88 team. This isn't going to be something that Bowman's going to go out there and he's going to, you know, going to be able to put on and win this race by any means. I think Bowman's going to be able to go out there and maintain and more or less help the team with staying within you know, the car owners' points is what this is about. You know, this team needs to continue competing on car owners' points at this point, and they need somebody that has a lot of experience. Now, you know, he's you know, even though that he's been you know, starting 20th in tomorrow, I mean, he's been very, very fast in that car. In practice, today already he's already jumped in the top 15 in Sprint Cup Series practice, and yesterday he was fast also. So I think just by virtue of that team being able to work together, I think that we're going to see him come out with a very strong finish. I'm sorry, you cut out again.
Oh, I apologize. I said Joey Logano is a driver I like to watch. See where he comes from. He should do well there in London. I mean, still in the 27th, but you're here. Joey Logano, talk to us about him.
Yeah, so Joey Logano this weekend, he's going to start sixth out there. You know, this is kind of like a home race for him coming out of Connecticut. So this is one of the closest tracks that he's going to be able to run. You know, you take a look at Penske Racing over the last couple of years out there. Brad Keselowski has been able to win out at New Hampshire Motor Speedway over the last couple of years. Even Joey Logano has had some very good finishes out there. So, you know, when you look at them, they've been able to do some amazing things out there at that track. So, you know, Joe, with both of them in that Penske stable, and in the last 2 weeks with Brad Keselowski winning. I think those two are going to be able to work together this weekend. He's you know, at 132.9 speed already. He's just a tad off from the top five. Just a tad off from the top five. You know, that's the power that they're producing, the chassis that they're building over there at Penske. They're getting better and better every single week, and they're starting to compete with Joe Gibbs Racing. Joe Logano is going to be able to run these guys down this weekend. It's like I said, it's a home game for him. It's going to be something that's going to play right into his wheelhouse. He's going to be able to, obviously, work this track to his advantage. And he's going to be able to get a very, very good finish out of this, I think. I think Penske Racing as a whole, like I said, with Brad winning out there and Joey's won out there too. So I think we have to watch both of them, most definitely. Yeah, you're breaking up like really, really bad on your end. Like, I'm getting like about every third or fourth word out of you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you now.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you.
All right, roger that. All right, let's start that over again. Chase Elliott, number 24 car, filling huge shoes there in the overall job that Chase Elliott's done. You got to be happy with this kid. I think he's succeeded everything that was ever expected of him. When you look at Chase Elliott, what kind of grade would you give him? What would you say? How would you say he's done in filling that number 24? Very, very important car.
I think he's done everything exactly what you have to expect out of Chase Elliott. He's already 8th in points in the Sprint Cup Series. He's been contending for wins. Of course, he's made some rookie mistakes, and that's to be expected in your first full-time year in NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. But him and Ryan Blaney have both been spectacular this season. It's a very tight points battle between those two for the Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings. And I think it's really just going to come all the way down to Homestead this year, or very close to Homestead on who's going to even win this thing. I think between the two of those, and especially Chase Elliott, you know, he's done spectacular over the entire year as a whole. When you look at some of the races that he's had, he's only had one DNF all year long. He's had 6 top 5 finishes, 11 top 10s in 18 races. I mean, what more can you really expect out of a rookie in this series? I mean, he's been racing all his life, and that's not to say that most rookies don't race, but this is absolutely spectacular for a driver, and especially a rookie. At the same time, to be able to come into this series and put this kind of show on. I mean, he's leading drivers right now, such as Jimmy Johnson, Matt Kenseth, Denny Hamlin, Dale Earnhardt Jr. in the point standings at this point. I mean, that's huge at this point for a rookie to be able to do something like that. All that with no wins. Some of these guys have wins, and he's able to maintain and lead points over top of them. So I think you have to look at his season as a whole. And even if he You know, even if I'm sure he will make it into Chase. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that, you know, his season is definitely going to be a season that most rookies or, you know, anybody coming into this series next year, or, you know, when you take a look not only at his, but him and Ryan Blaney as a whole, I think you're going to look at both of them and say that these two really did were kind of set the bar for rookies from this part on, of this point on out.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Has there ever been, and maybe you can tell me this, because I don't really know the answer to this, but has there ever been a rookie to win a championship in his rookie year?
There's been a couple that have done so. It's been many years since it's happened, but not in the modern era. It's incredibly hard with the competition level the way it is these days. You'd have to go back many, many years into NASCAR history to find a rookie that's won in their rookie season. But, yes, it has been done.
Does Chase Elliott have a championship in his rookie year?
I think he's going to falter when it comes to the chase. He has not had to withstand the chase format before, and I think that's something that as a rookie, he's going to falter at. I think it's going to be a learning experience for him, and I think that he's obviously, with no wins, he's going to be at the bottom, and he's going to have to dig from the bottom up, and that's going to be something that is going to be a learning experience for him this year and how he's going to approach next year. I think drivers with much more experience, that veteran status, that know how to, work from the bottom up, the Jimmy Johnsons, the Kevin Harvicks, the people that have done it before. I think those are guys that are going to be able to excel from that. A rookie that just has not had to experience that before, I think, is going to be using this as a learning experience.
Right. Well, he's certainly learning a lot, and he's showing us a lot at the same time. Well, we're talking to Steve Wilson here. We've been talking with him from Speedway Digest. I guess Tim Despain, we did not hear from him, so I assume that he's not wasn't able to call in today. We'll get him on another time. So we'll wrap it up here. What I want to know, though, is let's just kind of break down today and tomorrow's race, the dark horses, the X factors, and who's going to win today and tomorrow.
Obviously, when Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski are in a race together, you can't really count either or out of it. Kyle Busch most definitely, just because of, well, it's Kyle Busch. I think some of the X factors in today's race are, you take a look at the Xfinity series, and some of these drivers have just been getting incredibly better, even with Kyle Busch in this race, or even with Brad Keselowski in these races. The competition level has obviously is being picked up and for the better. I've talked to some of the drivers over the last couple of weeks, and a lot of them seem to think that the competition level within the Xfinity series is being picked up and it's being done for the better. So I think you've got a lot of drivers out there that have the potential to win. It's just a matter of being patient. I think it's just a matter of hoping or seeing if something happens to Kyle Busch. Not that we want anything to happen to Kyle Busch, but it's just that if something does happen to him, it's capitalizing on that, on that incident with Kyle Busch. As far as tomorrow is concerned, brakes are a concern. Brakes are going to be a concern today, because you get going real fast down these long straightaways, and then you got to break it down real quick and get around these turns. They're tight turns out there, and then you got to get out and do this whole thing again. And like I said, it's just a big oversized Martinsville is really what this comes down to be. Anybody who can manage their brakes, maintain that throughout, you know, these long races, 301 miles tomorrow or 200 miles today, is going to be the one that comes out to be. As far as who's going to win tomorrow, I don't know. Like I said, Jimmy Johnson is a guy that has been able to kind of capitalize on these, especially in a place like Martinsville that takes a lot of braking. You know, I think you also got Joey Logano. Joey Logano has been able to win out there before. So you got two guys out there like that. I think Kevin Harvick is somebody else, but my dark horse for that is going to be Carl Edwards, like I said before, because he's long overdue a win.
Well, we'll certainly see what London brings. London, New Hampshire, and then next week here in Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And, you know, there'll be 80 or 90,000 people there. It'll feel empty because this is the capacity track, but it's going to be awesome to have the NASCAR back here in Indianapolis. Steve, we really appreciate you joining us today. Certainly, obviously, we'll be catching up with you next week to break down the Brickyard 400. Where can people find your work
in the Imagine? Right. Find us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/SpeedwayDigest, and SpeedwayDigest.com.
Okay, Steve. Nice talking with you, buddy, and we'll catch up with you soon. You have yourself a good weekend, sir.
All right. You too. Thanks.
Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest joining us today, talking some NASCAR here on The Balance. My name is Sean Marquis, El Presidente. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today's show. We'll be back on our two-hour schedule probably next week or the week after, as we're still trying to fine-tune some things here at The Balance, but that's fine. We're getting all that done. My name is Sean Marquis, El Presidente. Remember, don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. I'm out of here. Deuces.
Fall hard, fall head, fuck a man, fight double pain.